I learned one thing from Ryan's loss. It's that life is very precious and very fleeting, and you have to make the most of the opportunity and the relationship and the time that you're given.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being here with me today for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast, brought to you by Runners Connect. So I know this is a busy time of year, and I just want to take a moment to really thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for tuning in today and every other week. The support and time you dedicate to Runners Connect is the gift that just keeps on giving week after week. So thank you so much for that. Last week, we heard from Katie Sherritt, who was the CEO of Back on My Feet. And wow, what an episode that was. So as we settle into the cold nights, it was something that really warms our hearts. And okay, that was really cheesy, but it really was a wonderful episode. We love our sport, and runners are very passionate about running, which is what makes our community so strong, as we love to help out other runners. And we love to kind of band together when it comes to battling those rumors from non-runners about how bad running is for us. Do you remember all the times running is bad for your knees has come around? Yeah, me too. Well, running also went under fire when an elite runner passed away a few miles into his marathon some years back. If one of the fittest people on the planet can have a heart attack, well, that must mean every runner is putting their life in danger every single day, right? Well, that's probably what people were saying to you, and you probably heard the story of Ryan Shay's passing, but the chances are you heard a version of the story that wasn't quite true. And today I have Ryan's former wife on the show to talk about what really happened and just how hard it hit her. So Alicia is a professional runner herself, and you'll hear about her running journey, especially during that grieving process. This is one of those episodes that hits you right in the heart. But she also has some fantastic advice that she's learned through what she's been through. So I want to leave the rest to Alicia, but first I want to thank Saucony and Body Health for sponsoring this podcast. It really helps so much, and I really hope you're enjoying their products as well. So after a word from them, we will meet Alicia.
Running is tiring, we know that, but the accumulation of miles is what really gets us, leaving us sore and exhausted. I take Body Health Perfect Amino tablets to improve recovery, and you should too. You will notice a difference, and you can learn more at bodyhealth.com. This podcast is brought to you by Saucony. For those of you who have not heard of this brand, they're the best. Really. I don't just wear Saucony for every run, but they also have a great collection of casual clothes for everyday use, which I live in. Use coupon code TINA for 10% off your next order.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Alicia.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to join you today.
No, this is great to have you on. And, you know, I'm sure some people listening will have heard quite a lot about you, maybe even looked into you a little bit in the past. And then others may not have even heard anything. You know, there are so many runners in this running world, so it can be difficult to stay on top of everyone. So maybe you could start by telling us a little about your background, you know, how you began and, you know, after playing basketball and doing rodeos, how you transitioned into running.
So kind of starting back from the beginning, I started running mostly just to be a better basketball runner. I grew up in Northeastern Wyoming, and basketball was kind of everyone's world. So I was just looking for any advantage to be better. And then as my height topped out at 5'4" and about 100 pounds, I decided that probably my running skills were going to be a better use to me in the future. So made a really hard transition for me at the time. It seemed pretty dramatic to leave basketball and that whole world. But I started running more and just really, really loved I was always a hard worker. Even when I was little, I would just practice something for hours and hours and hours. So I really took to that part of running and kind of progressed through high school and was able to get a scholarship to run for Stanford University and spent my college career there and then graduated and kept running and then stopped running and resumed running and kind of had a little more volatile relationship with running than I did when I was younger. And here I am now in Flagstaff, Arizona. I've been here for almost 9 years and I'm still racing and competing and now coaching and just really love the sport of running. And I've had a huge variety of experiences in the sport, and it's just something that's become a part of my life, and I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. And you know, obviously there are ups and downs, and we're going to go through those today. You know, everyone listening, I'm sure, has had some ups and downs with running. You know, that you I'd be saying you weren't normal if you had just only had good experiences, but yours may be a little bit more extreme in some directions, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But before we move on, you did also, it says on your website that you also used to do rodeos. And I was just wondering, because I personally used to horse ride as well, if you found that if you were kind of competing at it, if there was anything that you had from the horseback riding that kind of shaped you into the runner or the person that you are today, did that affect your running in any way, would you say?
Absolutely. I would say not so much from a competitive standpoint, but from a work ethic standpoint. If you compete with horses and horses are part of your lifestyle, and for me that was in the form of rodeo, at a young age, it's a very big responsibility because you have these beautiful, powerful animals that are kind of relying on you, and you have to take care of them and learn very specific skills that allow you to not only get better, but to be safe and take care of the animal adequately. And so it was just a lot of responsibility. I mean, it was every day. Like, there's no break from just like, I just don't really want to do this right now. And so I think that was great for me to learn at a young age, just that work ethic and that responsibility. And more importantly, it was the whole rodeo community was a very tight-knit community and just a very hardworking group of people with a high level of integrity. And it really taught me things that I think are valuable as a person and as an athlete. And so I really carried that forward with me in my running career, and just that appreciation of the strength of the community that you're within and trying to build that and enhance that. It's not just about you doing your best. It's about this kind of collective entity, and you really are a better version of yourself, I think, when you're in that kind of an environment.
And how does that compare to the running community? Because when you were describing that, you know, that almost could have paralleled what people would say about the running community. Would you say it's, you know, the same kind of thing, just obviously a different passion?
Exactly. I would say it's very similar. And I think that that's why I have kind of found myself, you know, being more rooted in the running community, even as I get older. And I would say, especially, I've found that that's true in the trail running community. It's a little less, I don't know how else to say it, but a little less cutthroat maybe than like the road and track realm, where there's not like quite a division between elite or professional runners and the mid to backpackers. And I really love that. I love that it's just like a family of people going out there to really put their best forward. And so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I've definitely seen that through the other guests that we've had on the show. They've kind of mentioned the same thing with the trail and ultra running side of things. So, you know, after college, you had a lot of success and you moved to Mammoth Lakes, but you did struggle. So I thought maybe you could kind of share with us, you know, what happened, because often people think of professional running as this, you know, you're just this gazelle who runs along and everything's going great. And it's just like the dream job for all runners. But maybe you could kind of show us that it's not always what it seems, and you know, what your experience with that was. And just tell us whatever you feel like about that.
Sure. Well, so I was really blessed to go to a college and be on a team that was just already performing at a high level. And I just kind of, you know, got just kind of tucked in and went along with it and really, really benefited from having a great team and was able to win two NCAA individual championships and team championships. And everything was just kind of wonderful and smooth sailing. And then my senior year, the day before we were leaving for the NCAA championships, I had an accident where a ladder collapsed underneath me and I fell and hit my head and lost consciousness for a long time and ended up with a really, really bad concussion and cervical injury. And my sacrum got like hit something when I fell as well. So just all around, I really, really beat up my body. And unfortunately, you know, I was like mentally really out of it after it happened and didn't really have the best medical care. And I was kind of sent along to the NCAA championships the next day and kind of ran through it. But my body was in shock, and like it just kind of became this downward spiral from there where I just kept training and competing as I was expected to do and didn't really have, I just didn't have great medical attention. And so I just kept getting worse and worse to the point where I was like really even struggling to get through my classes and like remember to do homework or just have like remember anything in general. And so I thought that once I graduated, I would kind of take a month to rest up. And then I had this great opportunity to run with the Mammoth Track Club, which had Nina Castor, who was, you know, my female distance role model, and Meb Keflesky, and a lot of other great athletes. And so I took that opportunity, but my injuries, my cervical injuries, really just wreaked havoc on my running. And so I eventually had to stop and kind of just take my health into my own hands and try to figure out what was going on. So I went from like the highest of highs to just like, I didn't even want to run like a fun run 5K ever again in my life. Like I was in just so much pain day to day that I couldn't like fathom being a runner ever again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it really swung from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Mm-hmm. And was it like just physical, or did you kind of reach a point where you just kept getting physical things go wrong and eventually emotionally it just sucked all the fun out of it? Or was it you wanted to keep going with the mental, but physically you just couldn't handle it?
The physical really wore on me mentally and emotionally to the point where I just didn't want to run. I couldn't fathom running without pain. So I don't know. I mean, the physical definitely became before the mental, because I kind of dealt with it for 2 years and didn't really have any answers. And I think I was like trying to be kind of just tough about it and not really talk about it or not like whine or, you know, be weak. And so I don't think I really expressed to like people around me how bad I felt. So all they saw was that just this decline, you know, without really knowing specifically why. So yeah, it became like a really hard mental and physical cycle. And I didn't know what to do for myself. That's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned that you didn't want to kind of let on, you wanted to just kind of tough it out. And just curious, now you are a coach yourself. Do you think that experience taught you how to read people a little bit better to see if they are actually struggling more than they're letting on? Or how has that helped you to be a better coach? Because you kind of know how runners are with, we like to just say, oh, everything's fine, or I don't want to wimp out, or whatever.
Absolutely. I think that one of the biggest keys to having a successful coach-athlete relationship is being able to kind of read that athlete and what type of person they are. So when I work with somebody like myself, if I see that people start, you know, they do 8 miles for their long run instead of 13 and their time starts to decline or their enthusiasm starts to decline, like it's usually not that they're just don't want to work hard. It's that something else is going on underneath the surface. So yeah, that's really given me a lot of insight. And I think that sometimes when runners struggle, especially at a higher level, a lot of times people say, well, oh, that person's just a head case, or like they need to pull it together. And I definitely had people kind of put that on me. And now I have this perspective of, you know, somebody that's really passionate and driven about running, rarely do they just decide like, okay, today I'm just going to start being a head case and just make everything kind of messy and, you know, not really try as hard. Or you don't really lose desire like that if you're naturally a competitive person that wants to do well and if you love running. So, yeah, I think I'm a lot more sensitive and maybe intuitive in that respect.
Yeah, no, that would make sense. And then when you know, kind of decided enough was enough, that must have been really difficult to kind of follow your heart when, you know, all we're ever taught is don't quit, don't give up. So how did you make yourself be able to do that and just step away?
It was really hard because I had never in my life kind of given up on something or quit or stepped away. And it really was important that I had people around me that did know me kind of from start to finish and could see the ways that I was struggling and really kind of step in and give me wisdom and encourage me to stop and take care of my health and figure out what was going on and seek, you know, medical attention. And one of those people was Lauren Fleshman. We were both on the Mammoth team together, and we were over in Europe training and racing one summer. And I remember it very vividly. She sat down and she's like, you just have to do something. Like, don't listen to your coach. Don't listen to your agent right now. Like, you just need to take care of yourself. And having her tell me that, I don't know why, like, it kind of released me to be like, you know what? Like, yeah, you're right. Like, I can do this. And it kind of felt like a weight off of me that I just, you know, knew that that was the better thing to do. So I think sometimes it's good to have, especially when you're having difficulty, like, have people in your life that can give you that wise counsel that you can't necessarily see for yourself in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's great. And it's amazing that the amount of people that mention Lauren and how she's the one that turned their life around or she's their inspiration, it just blows my mind. Just what a girl, like, really is just someone very special.
She's very special.
And then, so you went to coaching yourself, but was that difficult to coach other people, kind of being in the world and seeing other people succeed? Or, like, could you separate that quite easily in your mind?
I could separate that because I've always, growing up and in my family and my community, it was really valued to use your strengths and your talents to not just, like, be the best version of yourself, but also to, like, help other people. And so I just kind of saw it in that way, that I didn't realize how much kind of wisdom and experience I had gained throughout my own running career, that it was really cool to see that I could translate that into reaching out and helping other people. And so, you know, I don't think I would have admitted at the time because I had such a sour relationship with my running, but I still really loved running. And so it was really, really quite, I don't know, just a rewarding thing to be able to reach into other people's lives and to help them. And I also realized too that coaching is like 50% helping people, you know, work towards their goals, but it's also 50% just kind of partnering with them in their life and like being their fan, being their support, being their encourager. And so I loved it right away.
Oh, that's great. And must have been a nice feeling for you to know that you were making a difference in people's lives like immediately. So that is good to hear. Okay, so the next thing I kind of wanted to talk about is something that, you know, may bring up some, you know, tough moments, but you did give me the go ahead to kind of ask you about it. And, you know, many runners would have heard the story of your husband, Ryan Shea, but they might not have put it together that it was him. So people often get this story wrong of what happened, and it kind of was taken out of perspective by many, you know, news publishers and sources. So can you kind of share with us your version of what happened and, you know, just kind of set the story straight?
Sure. So just to maybe backtrack a little bit to that period of time when I was struggling with my cervical injury, that's the time when I met Ryan. So as difficult as things were on the running front, it was the best time in my life because I met the love of my life, and we developed a really beautiful relationship and just grew very close very quickly. And so as my running kind of faded out, this relationship became an incredibly positive thing in my life. And I continued to support him in his own training and racing. And the biggest goal for him was the 2008 Olympic trials, which were actually run in 2007. And so undoubtedly the work ethic and the character that he's portrayed and has been portrayed about him is absolutely true. He was the hardest working person I've ever met. He was so passionate about doing everything 100% that it kind of took me aback. I had never met somebody that was just that all in and committed. So that certainly is true. I think the unfortunate thing that I see about the way that he was portrayed is that he was so much more than a runner. He was an incredible human being, and a lot of things that came out after his passing just kind of made him out to be this like obsessive, extreme runner, which, you know, he was dedicated and he was hardworking, but he was a much more well-rounded person than that. And his main focus was really pouring into other people. And so that's sad to me because I think it elevates running to something more than it should be in the scope of, you know, our lives and the legacy that we leave. So, and I also realize that, you know, any publication, they're trying to put out news, something that is kind of catchy or intriguing. And so a lot of articles that have come out have done that with Ryan's life. And it's been really disheartening. But I also realize that that's just kind of the way the industry works. And Runner's World actually just republished an article that they ran in 2008 about him. And it was really strange rereading it. And I'm like, man, this is like reading a storybook. Like, this is, so many of these things are exaggerated or they're not true. And I started to get really upset again. And then, you know, it's just, that's just what it is. And people that knew Ryan and were touched by him know the person that he was. And I think that there was also a lot of kind of controversy when he initially passed away because the cause of death was unknown, and it took a really, really long time to get all of the autopsy reports. And he passed away because of a heart issue. He had an enlarged heart, which most runners do from just the cardiovascular workload. His was even more enlarged, which if you have kind of any sort of heart abnormality, it puts you at a greater risk because of the way the heart pumps and just the way our cardiac output works. And he had scarring on his heart. It was old fibrosis that was caused. They theorized that it was caused from when he had pneumonia as a child and didn't go to the doctor, and it was kind of left untreated. And I think this is maybe when he was around like 5 or 6 years old, but it's the type of fibrosis that they would be common to see from something like that. So he had that thickening and scarring around his heart, and that combined with his enlarged heart, it just created an electrical misconduction in his heart that just happened. I mean, it it's very rare, but it can happen, and it did happen. So it didn't have anything to do with the way he lived his life or overtraining or undertraining, or, you know, he didn't do drugs and alcohol when he was younger. He certainly didn't use performance enhancing drugs, which I think a lot of people were quick to say, like, well, if a young guy, 28-year-old guy has a heart attack, there must be something foul going on. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, you know, that can happen to a 13-year-old boy playing basketball. It just can happen. So yeah, I guess I would say that's kind of a summary of some of, like, the biggest kind of misconceptions surrounding his passing.
And just one thing, if you can confirm this to me, but a lot of, you know, people, when they hear that, you know, he passed away, like, during a marathon, they think, oh, well, you know, he was pushing himself too hard. But this occurred, if I'm correct, at about 5 miles in. So he wouldn't have been, you know, it wouldn't have been that he wasn't at that point where he was, you know, his all cylinders were screaming stop. He would have been very early in the race where, you know, he would have been relatively calm at that point. So was that, do I have that right with the?
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I actually still have his watch from the race, and that had his splits on there. He was taking, this is before, he was just wearing like a basic Nike watch that he was taking splits, and they were running really easy. I mean, they were running a pace that would be appropriate for female marathon runners. Uh-huh. And for these guys, it was like a jog, and it was a really kind of cold, windy, blustery day. And so, you know, they were, all of the guys were kind of tucking in and slowing down to not do the work and be leading in the wind. So they were running extremely easy. Like, it wasn't even a workout pace for him.
Well, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clear that up. And, you know, that must have been like absolute worst nightmare for you going through that. And I thought maybe you could share with the listeners, you know, how you kind of handled it after it happened. You know, you kept training, you kind of refused to grieve and allow yourself that time to recover. So, and, you know, this could be a lesson to other people. So I thought maybe you could share with, you know, how you kept going with your training and what happened afterwards.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there's no real like plan or guideline of how you navigate such a big, dramatic life tragedy. I mean, we got married and we started building our life together and planned on, you know, it was like that. That's just everything forward in life was together, and we were so excited about that. And so to have that stripped away so suddenly was just, it's even hard. I can't even put into words how traumatizing and painful that is. So not really. I didn't really know how to handle it. And, you know, my way of handling the grief and the weight and the pain was I just would run until I was so tired. I was kind of like numb, you know. That was like kind of my daily dose of medicine, that I could at least have like 2 hours of getting out from underneath like the weight of the grief. And so I was training for the 2008 Olympic trials, which were in the summer. And I think I did it partly because I just didn't know what else to do. You know, it was like my default, like everything in my life was different. And so running was like the one thing that was constant and familiar. And I knew how to get up and train. And so I think that it was good to kind of have that routine. But when I started using it, kind of, you know, just run my emotions away, that became very, it became very detrimental, because I was really fit. So I could like just go out and just run crazy hard. And then, you know, and then I would be emotional all day. And then I was dealing with all the just legal things and paperwork that go along with losing a spouse. And then at night I wouldn't sleep because all my emotions would catch up with me, and I would have nightmares, and I would just relive all these things and I'd wake up and I'd run hard again. And so it became, just a really, really destructive cycle. And I didn't quite realize what I was doing in the time because I was just living like literally like minute by minute. And I was living in a community of other young runners and, you know, nobody really stepped in and was like, okay, just, it's okay to rest. It's okay to breathe. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to not act like you're strong and you're like fighting through this, you know, it's okay just to let down. And I think that if I were to speak into somebody's life that was similar to mine at that time, I would just reassure them that like, it's okay to be weak. Like it's okay to like, this thing has totally wrecked your life. It's okay to acknowledge that. You don't have to like constantly be toughing it through it, you know? So I definitely have a lot of hindsight about that, but the reality is I was just doing the best that I knew how to do at the time.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I'm sure many of us would have acted in the same way, and it makes total sense. You know, that's the time you can control. You can't really, you don't really have control over too much else in your life. But like you said, you can numb yourself of that pain, and it's kind of almost a bit like self-harm. You're kind of using that pain to like take away from those feelings. So anyone listening who maybe is going through something really tough in their life or has a loved one who is going through some tough times in their life, what would you say, what would you like to say to them, or what would you say to give them advice?
I think that, you know, just like I mentioned previously, that I think it's really important when you're going through something that really reduces you to that level of weakness, that it's good and important to let other people into your life that really have the ability to kind of give you strength and can help you so that you're just not out there like fighting this battle on your own. And I think that's kind of how I felt, or maybe the position that I put myself in. I was just trying to be tough and trying to be strong and all these things that like in our society we value, you know, is those are characteristics that you want to have. But when something that dramatic happens in your life, like it's okay to like let it, you know, to let it have its impact and not try to use all the strength to fight back against it. You know, that's for later on when you're trying to take steps forward. But grief is an emotion that is okay to feel and to have. And so I think, you know, kind of acknowledging that and then finding like healthy ways to work through that pain, like going out and running, you know, 100 plus miles a week at really hard paces, it's self-destructive, just what you said. So finding kind of that balance and having people that can help you find that balance, I think are really important.
Yeah. And, you know, unsurprisingly, your body did eventually break down. And unfortunately, it was just before the trials. So, you know, just to add more heartbreak to what you were going through, that, you know, you had to watch that and know that you couldn't even get to do that. So, you know, from what I've read, correct me if I'm wrong, it took you 4 years before you went back to competition. And you know, 2 years to recover from kind of what you did to your body. So, you know, if you could maybe explain to us like the dangers of overtraining, you know, people who think that, oh, if I'm not going to get injured or if I'm not injured, then I'll be fine. It's not going to do me any harm. It makes me feel better right now, but maybe just to kind of stop them in their tracks and realize that, that running hard, be it for grieving or be it just because you enjoy running hard, is not good for you in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I think that one thing I've really learned, and something that I am able to look at the athletes that I coach in what they're going through in their lives, is that physical stress can really take a toll, but emotional stress is the impact of physical stress times 100, 200, 300. I mean, it is so can be so powerfully destructive in your body. And so if you have a period of time of physical stress, or you are have emotional things going on in your life, those things really have to be factored in to training. And overtraining in comparison is a little bit easier to pop out of. But when you are overtraining because of all of this emotional stress, that makes you tip over a lot quicker, I guess, if I could put it that way. It's just really toxic for the body. And so it's not just the overtraining, but it's like what factors are leading to the overtraining. So had I just been training hard, I mean, I could have taken a month off and just popped back out of it. But it was that my body, my mind, my heart was all going through stress. It's really, really powerful. And I think as athletes, you kind of have this false sense of strength sometimes, where you're like, okay, yeah, I can do this and I'll be fine, until the day that you're not. And when you get yourself that deep into a hole, it takes so much longer to come out of that, because it affects, you know, various hormones in your body, all sorts of things that do not rebound overnight. They take months or even years. So, you just can't abuse your body, no matter what the reason is. It's really, you can't get away with it. You're not like the exception to the rule when it comes to like physiological, like, you know, just pathways and things that happen when you treat yourself that way.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, we can all be guilty of kind of thinking that we're the exception. You know, we're the one that can get away with something that no one else can. And, you know, I'm just as guilty as that, of it, as anyone else is. I mean, we may have different ways that we do it. Like for me, it's sleep. I feel like I can get away with less sleep, and I probably can't, but I feel like I can. And, you know, everyone's going to have their something that they think they're the exception. But I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, in reality, none of us are. So,
no.
And then how did this change your feelings towards running? Were you just, you know, was this like the nail in the coffin that was like, I hate running? Or did you still have it in your heart all that time during that recovery process?
Oh, I desperately wanted to run during that time, just jog, just to be outside, just to breathe. It didn't diminish my desire to run. I just physically couldn't. It's crazy to imagine that I was like that deep in a hole that I just couldn't even like go out for a 20-minute jog. But everything in my life had been stripped away, and I was like, I just wish I could at least have this one thing, you know, just for like therapeutic reasons, just to go out in the woods and run and move. And it was a really challenging time of my life, because, like I said, everything had been taken away and running. And so like, just kind of there I was like totally weak and unable to do so many different things. And so it was really a formative time in my life where I was like, okay, I have nothing. So like, what am I going to do? You know, like, how am I going to just start taking one step at a time to try to kind of rebuild my life? It was a really pressing, difficult time, but I really wouldn't trade those years for anything, because I think it really helped me align the focus of my life and the way that I'll live like forever now.
Mm-hmm. And what did you draw upon during that time? Like, what were some things that gave you strength or you focused on during that time?
Well, certainly, my faith, like my personal faith, really strengthened during that time, and in ways that are kind of hard to articulate. But, you know, just feeling that rock bottom and really like not feeling like I had any strength of my own, I just really like quieted my heart and my mind, and I learned and developed things that and like allow God to speak into my life in ways that I think, you know, when you're busy and you're chaotic or you have these goals you're working towards, like you just kind of, you know, you push past that and you don't kind of sit still and listen. And so that was really important. And then I think developing relationships in ways that I hadn't before that weren't necessarily based on sports or running was really important for me. I decided to stay in Flagstaff, which is a running based community, but I stayed here because of the community that I had and really beautiful people that I allowed to kind of let into my life and help me. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, one thing that my eyes were really open to is that running is a great sport, but it's also a very self-focused individual sport in many ways, especially at the professional level where, you know, you kind of have to be really focused in to be one of the best runners. And I kind of saw some of the negatives of that and maybe how at the time I thought, you know, if I'm able to run again, like, I don't want it to be this way. Like, I don't want it to just be this kind of selfish, self-focused life that I live. I want it to be something different. And so it gave me time kind of to gain this, I don't know, like this game plan of like, how am I going to live my life moving forward? How is it going to be meaningful? Like, if I learned one thing from Ryan's loss, it's that life is very precious and very fleeting, and you have to make the most of the opportunity and the relationship and the time that you're given. So, yeah, I kind of shook me a little bit, but I think in ways that are now good for me, I'm glad that I experienced that.
Mm-hmm. And so important. I'm glad you mentioned about the relationships, because I think that's something that we just so often take for granted. And you know, that's one of the things I love about working for Runners Connect is I get to spend all my day like building relationships and helping people and just knowing that it changes their lives. And to anyone listening, you know, if I've helped you, that makes me feel good. So I'm glad you were able to find that yourself. And was this about the time that you started working under the legend that is Jack Daniels, or was this before or after? Like, when, how did that play into it?
Yes. Yeah, so I actually knew Jack Daniels from back in my Stanford running days, because he was one of the coaches and the physiologist for the farm team at the time. So I kind of knew of him. And then when Ryan and I moved to Flagstaff in 2007, I had just started running after my head neck injury, and Jack was my coach, and I felt like the luckiest girl in the world that Jack Daniels would like give me the time of day. But it was incredible. Like, within a few months, I was like back to like the top fitness I had ever had, and just really developed a friendship with Jack. And he's such a great human being, and was an incredible resource for us to have in Flagstaff. And so kind of, you know, several years later, when I was coming back to running, you know, I still maintained that relationship with Jack and was able to learn more from him as a coach myself, not just an athlete. And so I feel so blessed that I've been able to spend so many hours sitting in his office learning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think he probably is, I don't know, in my opinion, he probably is the best known legendary running coach there is. And but he's kind of a bit of a mystery man in the running world. Like, you don't see interviews with him, you don't really hear much from him. I've had plenty of requests to have him on the show, but I haven't been able to get through. And so it's just kind of cool to hear from someone who actually knows him and can kind of give us a bit of a glimpse into, you know, what he's like and how things are. And so maybe you could share a bit more about the Run Smart project, what it is, and, you know, just kind of how that works within your, you know, coaching life.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the Run Smart project was started by a guy out of New York, Brian Rossetti, and then a couple of my best friends here in Flagstaff, that we all moved here together at the same time, kind of the first like mass like move of runners, distance runners to Flagstaff back in 2006, 2007. And around that time, Jack had started the Center for High Altitude Training here in Flagstaff, or he was the head coach and physiologist for that. So we all kind of were like underneath Jack, or like in his office, or listening to tell stories, or he was timing our workouts. And so when the Run Smart project continued to grow and build, and it was based off the premise of individualized personal training and coaching, it was only natural that they were able to twist Jack's arm to come in underneath the Run Smart project and really help build it and grow it to something that, you know, wouldn't be possible without his expertise and knowledge. And he certainly is a brilliant physiologist, but he's just like, it's crazy how many things he's experienced in his life. Like the running chapter is just like a little piece of like all the things and stories and wild places he's lived and things he's done. And so he definitely brings like a wide, wide range of expertise to the Run Smart project. And people adore him and they love listening to him. And I think it's mostly just because he's a great man and also a great scientist. And he is kind of a little bit of a mystery man just because he doesn't do social media. Like he's not a businessman. Like he just does what he loves. And even if nobody knows about it, he'd keep doing it. So maybe I'll drop him a note and see if he'll be on the show.
Yeah, there you go. Although you've said it now live on air, so you've kind of, you've set yourself up for that now.
But I'll follow through.
He seems like he'd be one of those people, you meet them every now and again, where everyone who meets them just wants to be around them. Like they don't care what they do. If they said, I'll meet you at 3 a.m. for coffee, everyone would be like, okay, I'll do it. Like just because he's just one of those people you just want to soak in every second you possibly can. So this has been really cool to like learn about. And how did your own coaching business kind of come out of this?
So Run Smart has been incredible. I think it's a great platform and I really love the vision that they've created. And I just wanted to, for me, like the best coaches that I've had have been just really hands-on and very specific and kind of developed in me a desire to kind of recreate that very personalized experience that I've benefited from so much. And I kind of just wanted a little bit more just to roll my sleeves up and get in a little deeper with some athletes. And so I created my own business. I still work for Run Smart and really enjoy the athletes I work with there. And then I kind of have my own coaching business, Alicia Shea Coaching, where I kind of get to do things exactly how I want to do them and you know, expand more into nutrition and just kind of more details of training that maybe I'm a little bit more limited to do with Run Smart.
Mm-hmm. And I would definitely encourage people to check out Alicia's website. And I will put a link in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC137. And, you know, as you mentioned, you have the coaching, you have the nutrition consultations, and I even saw you have retreats on there. So do you want to kind of maybe tell us a little bit about what that involves with some running retreats?
Sure. Yeah. So that's kind of a developing idea that my husband, Chris Fargo, and I are looking to put into action in this next coming year. And the premise is that, you know, first we live in Flagstaff, Arizona, which is just like this mecca for running. And then I've started doing more trail and ultra racing lately. And so I've been using, you know, not just the track and dirt roads and pavement around Flagstaff, but I've been up in the mountains, down in the Grand Canyon, the Red Rocks of Sedona. We just have this like huge array of just beautiful, stunning trails and geography in northern Arizona. And so part of it is we want to share that with other people. And we have a lot of requests that people want to come and visit and have us kind of show them around. But we also want there to kind of be like an educational component where We can personalize the retreats to what the athlete's needs are. And so have kind of it be part running, tour, retreat, and then also, you know, really equip athletes that they can leave being more knowledgeable and kind of having a better plan and direction for their own training. And we want to keep it with groups from like 2 to 6, just so we can keep it really kind of intimate and personalized. And we're really excited about this. Like I said, I love Flagstaff, so I'll show it off to anybody that wants to travel out here.
So it's 2 to 6 people, like for a weekend?
Yeah, so 3 to 4 days. Yeah, okay. 3 to 4 days is our, and we're going to have either a bed and breakfast option or a hotel option, kind of whatever people feel comfortable with. And yeah, we've been kind of brewing this for a while, and we're just finally going to be able to get it set in motion. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, no, I love the idea. And I love that it's so small and intricate and just, you know, really will allow you to get to know them. And, you know, we, Runners Connect has our own camp that we do at Zap Fitness in the summer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's great and it's wonderful getting to know people. And, but it can be difficult as us coaches to kind of get to know all the campers when there's like 30 people. So yeah. I love that this is kind of more of a unique experience in that it's just a few of you, and you get, you know, the, anyone listening who wants to go, you'll really get to know Alicia and Chris really well. So sounds awesome. And is there anything you want to say about why you believe retreats are just so beneficial on like a really deep level to runners?
Yeah, so, well, just kind of like you mentioned, camps, there's a lot of great running camps out there. And like you said, it's kind of hard to get to know people. And so I guess it really just depends on what somebody is looking for. And for us, what we are hoping is that this will be twofold. Like I said, education that's directed specifically to that person. Everybody has kind of different needs and questions and a unique background in the sport. And then also just like inspiration, because where we are, like, it's just, I mean, if you run down into the canyon and to the Colorado River that carves, you know, millions of years has been carving through the Grand Canyon, like, there's no words to describe just how inspiring and beautiful that is. And it's really a great boost for your own running and training. And it's kind of hard to quantify until you actually experience it. But those are the things that we're really hoping to leave people with.
Yeah, no, I look forward to hearing more, and maybe I'll be trying to make an appearance someday. I've been talking about going to Arizona someday or sometime soon. So maybe this will be the kick I need. All right, yes. Alicia, I'm just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we will be right back with the final kick round.
Okay.
Thank you to Saucony for sponsoring this podcast. Saucony is the favorite brand of runners everywhere. Now, I might be a little biased, but I absolutely love their running apparel, accessories, and of course, shoes. I've been running in Saucony for almost 3 years, and I love the brand like a friend. They don't just make fun clothes and shoes in beautiful colors, or cool colours for my male listeners. But this is a brand that actually cares about us as runners, not lumping us in with other sports. Saucony truly puts the time and effort into thinking what we actually want and need, and to me, that means a lot. My favourite shoes are the Saucony Ride for training runs and the Saucony Fast Twitch for workouts and races. And I've also been trying out the new Freedom ISO they have coming out in December. It's been getting a lot of buzz, and I can definitely see why. They're awesome! Get 10% off at Saucony.com by using coupon code TINA. Just don't get mad at me if you can't stop buying things on the website. I know I want it all, and I'm sure you will too. Thanks to Body Health for sponsoring this podcast. So what is Body Health, you ask? Well, as you probably know, the food and supplement industry is kind of corrupt, and it can be so overwhelming to find products that will not cause us to grow an extra arm in 10 years. I'm joking, of course, but you know what I mean, right? It's hard to know who to trust. Well, I can give you one company who can be trusted, and that's Body Health. Their products are not only going to help you recover and therefore improve as a runner, but their motto of optimizing health and vitality is what they truly believe in. I take 5 to 10 of their Perfect Amino tablets every single day, and it's made a huge difference to my recovery time. If you don't believe me, listen to this. Your body can only absorb and use 18% of the protein in whey and soy protein and only 48% in eggs. But our bodies can use 99% of the protein in perfect amino. Impressive, right? You can enter to win a pack of 6 bottles by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth, or you can get 10% off using coupon code TINA10.
All right, Alicia, I just have 5 quick questions for you. Pretty simple and nothing. We've gone over the deep stuff, so this is going to be interesting. what is the greatest advice you've ever received?
The greatest advice I've ever received is that God's grace is sufficient for us in our time of need. And that's just, you know, been my own personal story and journey. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing I hold on to.
Yeah, lovely. And if it, you know, that's the wonderful thing I love about these greatest advice quotes. It's just you learn so much about the person from what the answer is. And it just, if it helps you, you know, it may help other people, but at the same time, it's personal to you. So I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite running book or blog?
I love Alex Hutchinson's blog. He writes on Runner's World, and he's an exercise physiologist, and he just does a really good job of sorting through the latest science with running and nutrition and kind of stripping it down and making it very understandable.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And actually, we are going to, Alex recently did an article about Kenyan runners and cadence, and I'm actually having the researcher from that study. He will be on the show. I think it's next week. So stay tuned for that, anyone listening. So I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone thinks of that one. What would you like to tell a brand new runner?
I would say to a brand new runner, find things that make you fall more in love with the sport. So, you know, whatever that looks like for you, specific races, training, running community, you know, don't do things that take away from making you love the sport more and more so you can do it for the rest of your life.
Great advice. So important. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What is your pre-race meal?
My pre-race meal is pretty much anything, but I really like fish or chicken, sweet potatoes, salad, like super simple. But sometimes that ends up being sushi or Mexican food. So I'm pretty flexible.
Wow, Mexican? That's impressive. You must have a rock solid stomach. Yeah, I can eat a lot of things, but I think Mexican, I think I'd have to draw the line there. Okay, and finally, your favorite running product.
My favorite running product would probably be the Nike Wild Horse Trail Shoe, which is a shoe I run in pretty much every day and race in as well. And that's simply because it's a trail shoe. And I live in Arizona and it's really, really rocky and technical. So without that shoe, I just kind of beat my feet up a lot.
Yep, very important there. Okay, and just, you know, some ways people can follow you. As I mentioned, I will put links in the show notes with your website and all the things we've talked about today. But what would be the best way people can follow you if they want to kind of keep up to date with what you're up to?
I'm on Facebook as Alicia Vargo. I'm on Twitter as Alicia Vargo. I'm on Instagram is Alicia Vargo and Strava as well. So those 4 ways. And some of my names are maybe still Alicia Shea. I haven't changed everything over. So one of those 2 names, you can find me at all 4 of those things.
Okay. And I will put links in the show notes just in case anyone is having trouble. All right, Alicia. Well, thank you so much for your time today, for being honest and raw and just, you know, sharing your heart with us. And it really was appreciated. And, you know, it was fantastic to talk to you. And I'm sure you're going to inspire so many people today. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just love how open and honest she was and how she was able to share with us just how traumatic those experiences were and how they helped her to be a better runner and a better person. It makes me happy to hear that she's moved on and, you know, she's happy with her life now too. And as for those retreats, how amazing do they sound? I think I might have to book myself on one of those sometime soon. So we're well into the holidays and many of us are scrambling around trying to get the last of our Christmas gifts. But I want to remind you that both Saucony and Body Health offer wonderful products that are great for the runner in your life. And what more could a runner want than to stay healthy using those Perfect Amino tablets? They really help with recovery. And some beautiful new running clothes or shoes, which are enough for any runner to give us motivation on any day, no matter how crappy we're feeling. You can use coupon code TINA for 10% off at Saucony.com and TINA10 for 10% off at Body Health. So I hope you will be sure to check those out. So next week, we'll be talking to Jordan Santos, a researcher who has been completing some very, very interesting research studies about runners, including talking about that famous 180 cadence recommendation that you hear over and over again, which, by the way, Jordan has actually found to be completely useless for most people. If you love the science or you want to get your running form right and that's something you've been focusing on, this is going to be a must-listen episode for you. So thank you so much for tuning in and best of luck with that final last-minute Christmas shopping. Until next week, have a great week.